on a frigid Friday, and at least it is 5 p.m. on Friday. Welcome, everybody, to the American Net Radio on WHPC 90.3 FM, the Friday edition, of course. We're here until 6 p.m., and what we do is we pretty much change things up to be the How Music Changed series, which we've been doing now for a number of years. And this today's show is actually going to be part 18 in our series dedicated to Eric Clapton. It's it's also the final part, and we can say goodbye to Eric after today. Usually the last show is the easiest show for me in a lot of ways because I get to pretty much let the music do a lot of the talking. I'm going to try to let that happen because what we've got to cover is the past 10 years of his career, starting in around 2004 is where we pick up to the present. And we can pretty much handle it more or less the way that Eric himself has for the past decade, really. Basically, the guitarist is a man who's now comfortable in his own skin, dedicated to his family life. And when he does choose to play, he usually does it on his own terms and does what he thinks he wants to do. Every now and then, a career retrospective of some sort might crop up. And then other than that, he's just doing exactly what it is that he prefers to do. And that's where we'll pick up, where we had left off. Let's see. The first thing that we could start in 2004, he writes, in that summer of 2004, I staged the Crossroads Guitar Festival in Dallas. We put together a two-day event and invited a fantastic array of musicians to play, including B.B. King, Buddy Guy, Carlos Santana, Jimmy Vaughn, and J.J. Cale, all of whom graciously donated their instruments for a second auction that Christie's was to hold in New York. If you remember, we talked last week about the phenomenal money that he had gotten for Brownie and those guitars. Well, this event is when I finally parted with Blackie, the cherry red Gibson ES-335 that I had owned since the Yardbirds. It was the first serious guitar I had ever owned, and the day before the festival, I went to see them both on display and bid them farewell. It was hard. We had traveled a lot of miles together, and I knew I would never find another instrument that could take the place of either of these. The sums they fetched defied belief. Blackie went for $959,500.
Mackerel.
Creating a world auction record for a guitar, while the Cherry Red brought in $847,500, the highest price ever for a Gibson. Although altogether 88 guitars were sold, raising $7.4 million for Crossroads.
Wow.
Absolutely stunning. From there, he goes on to say that for some time I had been thinking about having a reunion of Cream. It had been almost 40 years since the creation of the band, and given the fact that we were all still capable of playing together, I thought it would be fitting to pay tribute to ourselves while we still could. I was also very aware that I had always been the reluctant one on this score. So, cap in hand, I made some delicate inquiries as to whether Jack and Ginger would be interested. They came back with a fairly positive response, and we decided to put on a week of shows at the Albert Hall, which, of course, was where we played our farewell concert. The dates were set for May of 2005, with a month of rehearsals preceding. From those shows, here's Cream with Rollin' and Tumblin'.
Hey!
I'm working out. Baby fell. So we start our last show with pretty much going full circle, going back to Cream. Another thing that Copton was doing right after that was done was he ended up starting to work again with J.J. Cale, which again is going full circle because J.J. Cale is one of the main people he got turned on to when he was playing with Delaney and Bonnie and he was getting into that whole, into the American scene. J.J. Cale is probably one of the most influential people on Copton's writing. So he decided to do an entire album with J.J. Cale. And in his own words, he says, I moved in with JJ for a week before we ever even went into the studio to go over the material and to get to know one another. He has a modest little house in the hills just outside Escondido, and we had a great time listening to music, talking about the old days, and just generally hanging out. Not a lot of work got done, but that wasn't the point. We were getting ready to play. His idea was to bring in a lot of musicians and try to record as much live as we could, overdubbing only when we needed to. This was fine with me. That's the way I like to work, too. But I thought we might have a problem now and then capturing the groove that I'd heard on his demos, which is usually created with drum machines and the like, and is such an important part of his sound. Well, the album did come out, and as Clapton is wont to do, especially on the albums of the past couple of decades, when he teams up with somebody, he seems to give an awful lot of the power to the other person who he is working with. And in a lot of ways, it's turned out that this album was just as much of a J.J. Cale album as it was a J.J. Cale and Eric Clapton album, with J.J. Cale providing really by far the lion's share of the material. It was called The Road to Escondido. From it, we'll play two tracks. We'll start with Any Way the Wind Blows, and we'll roll that right into Ride the River.
stuff. Floating down that old river, boy, trying to get to the other side. Yesterday, slowly fading, I've been waiting.
The most amazing thing about hearing Eric Clapton and J.J. Cale together is trying to figure out who's singing. You know,
Clapton. Well, there's something else more amazing about it too. Is J.J. Cale does bring a totally different sensibility to the work than what.
Yeah, he didn't take all of the slick out of what Clapton had been doing has been doing as of late, but he definitely gives it a really nice rootsier feel.
Mm-hmm.
And gets it back to really kind of like what I think, what I wish Clapton had been doing pretty much, you know, throughout his career. Or if not entirely, but at least keeping an eye. And he was for a long time doing pretty much that in the early 70s when he was pretty much, I mean, so much of his style has been, has come from what J.J. Cale is about.
Mm-hmm.
The thing is, like, it, once the 80s started to hit and he started getting a lot of his team together with some of the slickest players in the business and some of the slickest producers, everything became to such a high standard of perfection that
overproduced.
It's like
from it.
Taking like a really gorgeous old antique table and then putting a really glossy sheen on top of it.
Right.
It kind of made it look inauthentic at times.
Kind of like when people bought brass chandeliers and they started varnishing them.
I guess so, yeah. So, you know, J.J. Cale kind of like took some of that varnish off again, and it was kind of cool to hear a real earthy vibe.
Let it get a natural patina.
Well, the thing that you can see that's happening here now, for the really since the turn of the millennium from the year 2000, is Clapton is pretty much teaming up with people that he loves and respects, and also doing an awful some sort of reunion sort of things with people that were important to him in his career. So we started with the duet album with B.B. King. We end up with a duet album with J.J. Cale. He throws in there a reunion for Cream. And then the other thing that he does is he has a reunion of Blind Faith, in a sorts, by going out on tour with Steve Winwood. And when they went out on tour, they actually got a double live album out of that tour. Sort of the songs sort of like equally split between old Derek and the Dominoes material and Blind Faith material and some Traffic numbers all mixed together, plus a few tracks actually that were Jimi Hendrix tunes as well. Well, in order to avoid too much redundancy, and we played pretty much almost everything we could from the Blind Faith album and the Derek and the Dominoes record, it might be a good idea to hear how Clapton tackles one of Winwood's numbers with Traffic. Especially good because, I mean, not only is Winwood still an incredibly fine voice, and this is one of the best Traffic songs, in my opinion, ever, but the solo that Eric Clapton does on this record kind of like blew the top of my head off. I was amazed at how great it was.
Something.
So check it out. From the album entitled Live from Madison Square Garden, here's Eric Clapton and Stevie Winwood performing Glad. We'll be right back. Another interesting project there. Eric Clapton and Stevie Winwood from an album entitled, and a DVD as well, entitled Live from Madison Square Garden.
Ooh, they went for the whole package.
Oh, yeah. Now, what's interesting, this is finally, now we get to an actual genuine Eric Clapton solo album that was released at the end of the first decade of the new millennium. It was simply called Clapton, first solo album since the album that we ended last week's show with called Back Home. The track I want to play from the album is called Traveling Alone, although it's funny because it's a solo album called Clapton, put out at around the exact same time as the autobiography that we've been reading from. Which is called Clapton as well. I guess it was sort of like a companion piece.
I guess put it was.
the book called Clapton with an album called Clapton and with a song called Traveling Alone, although he hardly was doing that as the album was full of all
Traveling
sorts of guests.
Alone with all your friends.
He brought along Alan Toussaint and the Preservation Hall Jazz Band.
Oh, my gosh.
Stevie Winwood is on the record. Wynton Marsalis is on the record. Sheryl Crow, Derek Trucks. But nevertheless, from that record, here is a song entitled Traveling Alone.
Say
from an album simply entitled Clapton, from the about the year 2009, 2010 when that came out. Let me remind you that you're listening to American Hit Radio on WHPC 90.3 FM. Heidi and I are here every Wednesday and Friday from 5 until 6 doing this. On Fridays is the How Music Changed series, and you are hearing us complete our coverage of Eric Clapton. This is show number 18 dedicated to Eric. We move on to a new series next week. We go back into the Wayback Machine as we keep bouncing back and forth from the past to the reasonable present, which is what Clapton is actually a part of. When we go back in the Wayback Machine, we're going to cover the first family of country music, the Carter family. So that's where we'll be going next Friday. That's going to be very interesting. I'm looking forward to it quite a bit. Getting back to our Clapton's business, though, moves on to this decade, the year 2011. In fact, in April of 2011, Eric Clapton and Wynton Marsalis got together. They held a series of concerts at Lincoln Center, teaming up together. It's funny to imagine Eric Clapton and Wynton Marsalis getting together. As disparate as you might think it sounds on the surface, when you look at them both, you realize that these are the two of the most dedicated purists in the history of music, probably. You know, these guys were like so about preserving their genre.
Yeah, they love the history of music.
Absolutely. You know, Wynton was all about, you know, basically respect for the way that it was. And Eric Clapton, of course, one of the most incredible blues purists ever. So they had an awful lot in common. So they decided to record this thing. In fact, what they did was Clapton would pick the songs, and then Wynton Marsalis would pick the band to work out the arrangements with the band. And when he picked out the band, he picked out a band by using a template based upon King Oliver's Creole Jazz Band.
Oh, wow. Huh.
So he used something really traditional, just as he would, leaving room, of course, for guitar work to be put onto it. So the album was very 20s-centric in terms of what got done.
That's
in it.
Cool.
And Clapton picked songs to sort of fit that. So from the album entitled Play the Blues, live from Jazz at Lincoln Center, here's Wynton Marsalis and Eric Clapton performing Ice Cream.
Everybody wants ice cream.
pretty awesome, right?
Yeah, that was awesome.
Great arrangements totally. By Wynton Marsalis on that. And it's cool because, I mean, it's an Eric Clapton album that doesn't even sound anything remotely like an Eric Clapton album.
I know.
So in a lot of ways, the people who've been following him all these years could be turned on to something very new to them there, which I would definitely, you know, obviously you being from New Orleans, we're very New Orleans-centric in our own tastes. And we've covered an awful lot of this in this series, in the How Music Changed series. We dedicated an entire series of shows to New Orleans jazz, the birth of New Orleans jazz, the birth of jazz in general.
It is rock and roll in many ways.
Yeah, so it all basically comes full circle there in a great way. And it's cool to hear Eric lay back and, you know, as he usually does when he does these works with other people, he lets them do what they do best, just steps up when he needs to. I would have loved to have included his version of 44, the Howlin' Wolf Chester Burnett tune, which is also on that record, but it's 7 minutes longer than we're going to have time for. But it would have been nice to include that, to hear him singing on that one. But we got just maybe about 15 minutes left, so I think it's best to get to the next few albums that constitute, bring us up to the present and end the series. His 20th studio album was the next one to come out. After that live album, it was interesting that he switched from, finally, he decided to give up on the major label. I mean, I guess this is the whole, why even worry about it, right? I mean, in this day and age,
who needs that kind of pressure?
There was no need for him. Right. He ended up on the Surf Dog label. I mean, so long as somebody can get an imprint, it's about digital availability anyway. So, you don't really need a major. Eric was quick to recognize that. So he went to an independent label called Surf Dog, put out an album called Old Sock. Made it the whole project just seems so mellow and laid back and just totally independent minded. Like, you know, it's obvious that he was no longer trying to hold on to his pop star status. I mean, obviously the mainstream is a young person's game. It's a young person's turf. And at this point in time, he was 67 years old. He doesn't need to fight for the mainstream. He can do what he wants to. And, you know, I don't blame him.
He's got his own following, so they're gonna find him.
Exactly. Now, from that album entitled Old Sock, here's a track called Gotta Get Over.
Gotta get over.
In just about every way, the album Old Sock is a really good representation of where Clapton's mind has been at as of late. Being a family man and somebody who's finally found some peace within himself and some happiness in his life, just being okay day to day. So the
he
album
needed that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you can hear that song. It's blues based, but it's definitely no longer propelled by pain or by inner torment. It's it's an upbeat song, and it reflects a positive attitude. So you know, it's nice to hear that. It's nice to hear the Clapton. And still, you know, a lot of times when that happens, a lot of music can turn out to be very hokey. But Clapton sounds like he's sort of keeping, you know, the heart and soul of what the basis of the music really is in there. So congratulations on all fronts to him for that. Unfortunately, what did happen just a couple of years back, actually, the year before last, J.J. Cale had passed away at the age of 74. And coming on the tail of Clapton having done the duet album with J.J. Cale that we had just heard earlier, The Road to Escondido, he decided it might be time to go back and revisit Cale's catalog. So this time, again, what he does is he invited a bunch of his friends to record J.J. Cale songs and put out another album with Clapton on guitar. So the album features Tom Petty, Mark Knopfler, John Mayer, Willie Nelson, all performing J.J. Cale songs, singing them, Clapton accompanying them. It almost ends up not being like a Clapton album, hearing, you know, again, because he lets all of his collaborators take, you know, front seat on all of it. But it's Clapton was happy. He loved to be on the side. He loved, so this was him basically finding.
That was definitely where he wanted to be before people convinced him to get do all the things.
Exactly. So when he has his own choice, this is what he does. He lets the others, you know, maybe basically go up front. Well, he gets to basically do what he wants to do on the side of the stage, being comfortable there, while also paying tribute to the person who pretty much his entire career had more or less been built around the music of J.J. Cale. So it only made sense that he would put out an album called The Breeze, credited to Eric Clapton and Friends. Here's the song that more or less provided the title, J.J. Cale's song, of course, entitled They Call Me the Breeze.
Here's one of your old rock and roll favorites, friend. Shuffle on down to Broadway. One, two, one, two. Thank you.
Which brings us to the end of our series and to the present, where we are right now in 2015. I guess I should give Eric Clapton the last word as he ends his book with the following paragraph. I have been trying to retire all my life, constantly vowing to give up the road and just stay at home. And maybe one day I will be forced to do that for one reason or another. For now, I will leave the door open, and maybe that will make it easier for me to stay inside. A kind of reverse psychology, but who knows? All I am certain of right now is that I don't want to go anywhere, and that's not bad for someone who always used to run. So congratulations, Eric. I mean, you've gone full circle. Thank you for a lifetime of music, dedicating your entire life to what you did. You don't owe anybody anything from where I sit. It looks to me like you've given out enough already. Do what you want to. Give us music whenever you want to, and keep up the great work that you've been doing, because for the past decade, this show proves that you're not only still capable of making great music and great choices, but there's a lot of great stuff coming out of you still, and I'm sure there's plenty that we can do that could still be to come. That being said, you may as well end with the most appropriate of songs dedicating a show to Eric Clapton and his career. We'll go back to his show at the Royal Albert Hall with Cream. And we'll end with their version of Crossroads. Take care, everybody. We'll see you next week for a whole brand new series, as I said, dedicated to the first family of country music, the Carter family.
Thank you. Come on, Eric Clapton. Eric Clapton on the guitar vocals.